Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, I don't know about you, but I get confused when Christians say that they don't believe in climate science. And especially when they say that they have Christian reasons for not believing in climate science. I can kind of understand it when conservative politicians, whether it be Tony Abbott or whether it be the New Australian Conservatives movement, represented by people like Lyle Shelton, Senate candidate in Queensland, I can understand it when they make political arguments, economic arguments even, against the effects of climate change and what governments might be doing in order to ameliorate it. But I find it very difficult when those self-same people and others say that they have a Christian basis for questioning the science. In fact, when Donald Trump announced that the United States was leaving the Paris Agreement, a lot of environmentalists, of course, around the world were alarmed, because unless the US, one of the largest economies, takes part in attempts to reduce our carbon emissions and therefore potentially halt the increase of global warming with its various impacts, including rises in sea levels, if the United States pulls out, well, it's harder for the rest of the world to be able to make any real change. But other Christians especially seem to celebrate. Here's Republican Tim Walberg of Michigan said this at a town hall meeting: "As a Christian, I believe that there is a creator in God who is much bigger than us, and I'm confident that if there's a real problem, he can take care of it." Well, no argument there. If there's a problem, God can take care of it. I completely agree with the Republican senator. But what if God was asking us to be the ones who took care of it on his behalf? What if God actually was working through scientists and others who are concerned about global warming and have proposed amelioration techniques? What if God was depending on us for that work to be done? What if we were his hands and feet? That's the bit that I don't get. So tonight, let's take a deep look at this with Chris Mulheron. Now, Chris is a philosopher. He's a philosophy lecturer. He's also an Anglican minister, and he's the executive director of ISCAST, Christians in Science and Technology. Chris, welcome to the program. Can you help me to understand that?
I'm not sure that I can. It's a little bit of an odd thing. I agree with you that it's odd. My suggestion would be there might be a couple of things going on there. One is simply an attitude to science, and particularly science that has to do with, if you like, the big picture. Mm. Climate science has to do with the big picture and sweeps of history, just as, for example, the theory of evolution does. There could be some adverse reaction about that sort of thing. I think there's some confirmation bias going on amongst Christians and amongst those who aren't Christians. By confirmation bias, I mean we look at the things that confirm what we would like to be true, and we don't notice so much the things that challenge what we would like to be true. What we'd like to be true is that we don't have to worry about climate change. And then there might be a theological stream in there as well, as sort of God has given us the planet to use, to have dominion over, and what I would call a misunderstanding of dominion. I would talk in terms of responsible dominion being caring for the planet, and yes. But some people might think, well, it's just a resource to be used, investing a lot in preserving the planet. Well, Jesus is going to come back again, and why not use it up?
So this is the idea that says that there are resources to be exploited. God's got it under control. He'll return before it all gets too bad. And therefore, anything that we do in the meantime is either a waste of effort or a waste of money, or indeed now you get into the sort of political conspiracy end of the scale, may feed some sort of socialist agenda. And I've heard all of those arguments put. And yet, the way I would read it, interested in your view, we actually have a responsibility to be not exploiters, but stewards. And if there's evidence that what we're doing has caused harm, then one of the most biblical approaches we can take is to restore.
Yes, yes. I agree with you. I think that caring for the planet, it's about theology, really, and it's about your theology of creation. If your theology of creation says that this is God's good planet, and your theology of creation incorporates the whole universe, if you like, rather than thinking that God made human beings as the important thing and the rest of it is just for humans to use.
Yes.
So you either go that utilitarian line where you just use it, or you think there is something intrinsically good about the creation, and that isn't just human beings, it's the whole thing, and therefore, because it's intrinsically good, it ought to be cared for appropriately. And then you can have your arguments about what is appropriate care and what is not. But I think we're reaching the point where it's quite clear that human beings are not appropriately caring for the planet. And now that we know that, the responsibility is on us to about that.
And it's so revealing, isn't it? I always ask people, encourage people in discussions, to go back to the philosophical or theological underpinning of what they believe, mm-hmm. and even to bring that to mind, because most people don't think about that on a day-to-day basis, certainly in a conversation. Why did you form that opinion that way is a question you could ask, or on what are you basing that? In the realms of history, I well remember having a discussion with actually a teacher of history once, a Christian, who said, I'm not going to teach invasion, that's unbiblical. And I said to him, where do you go to find the first fleet in the Bible? How is that unbiblical? I said, it's a perspective. And he said to me, and it was a beautiful moment of honesty, he said, well, it's not really biblical, it's just the way I think about it. And he was reacting politically to an event, which he's perfectly entitled to do. But it's a good example of how our thinking can be fuzzy if we don't go back to first principles. How do you, because this is your field, bringing these two things together in a way that one doesn't challenge the other is your field. How do you reconcile what the science is telling you with your view about the sweep of history and the destination of the human race?
Well, I would go back to what I said just before about an understanding of the creation. I think if you have a theology of the creation as being God's good creation, then you have the foundations for what Christians who are scientists have been doing and saying for thousands of years. I mean, science hasn't been known for that long, but Christians have been approaching the creation and saying, as we do what we now call science, as we do that practice, we are uncovering the beauty of the creation and giving glory to the Creator.
Mm.
So Christians have said that sort of thing. They've used the metaphor of the two books of God, the book of God's works, which is the creation, and the book of God's word, which is the Bible. And Christians have talked about making sure that we explore and pay due attention to both of God's books because they both reveal the hand of God. So that's a harmonious view of scientific practice, and it's more than a harmonious view. It's a view that says scientific practice, exploring the creation, is actually a thing that is glorifying to God. That's how many Christians who are scientists understand what they're doing. And all truth is God's truth. Therefore, they don't fear exploring the natural world and seeing what they find.
Dr. Chris Mulheron is with us. He's the Executive Director of ISCAST, Christians in Science and Technology. It must frustrate those members of your association, ISCAST, who are Christians and who are scientists and technologists. It must frustrate them when their work is derided by unthinking people, Christian or otherwise, of course, but particularly Christians.
Yes, it is very frustrating. I wouldn't want to call them unthinking people. I think they think differently, and I enjoy conversing with them and trying to work out where the differences really lie, at least.
Should explain what I meant by unthinking them, because I don't want to cause offence. People who have not done more than perhaps reflected something that they saw on a Facebook page, or picked up a bit of goss and passed it on, or not formed a view based on any particular evidence, but rather, you know, just repeated something that they've picked up from their favourite conservative politician, it being therefore a political view, but not having thought about what our obligation as Christians is to our fellow human beings, for instance, which the science can inform.
Yes, the science can inform it if you allow the science to inform it.
Yes, there it is.
But some people are not willing to open that possibility, open that door, I think, for a number of reasons. I think one of the fundamental reasons is because people have the view that a particular way of interpreting the Bible, which is effectively interpreting the Bible as if it were scientific literature, throws it into conflict with science. Now, if you think the Bible is science and science offers another view, then you can see how you get a conflict. If, on the other hand, you don't think that the Bible is scientific literature, then some of the conflicts, at least, are diminished. I'm obviously thinking particularly about how you read the beginnings of Genesis.
Yes.
If you think that Genesis is telling us about dates and lengths of time and the order of sun, moon, and stars and that sort of thing, in other words, if you think it is giving us a scientific account, then it's going to fall into conflict with science. If, on the other hand, you think that the beginning of Genesis, as I do and as I think that most biblical scholars do, is about conveying truth, but conveying certain truths and not other truths, the Bible is made up of all different sorts of literature. When you read Revelation, or when you read the Psalms, or when you read other wisdom literature, you're not reading the same sort of thing as when you read the gospel accounts of the death and resurrection of Jesus. It's quite obvious that the gospel accounts are meant to be taken literally. Jesus rose from the dead, according to the gospel writers. It's not metaphorical language they use, and Paul makes that clear at in 1 Corinthians 15. He says, you know, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then we Christians are, of all people, to be pitied.
Yes.
But that's not the way other parts of the Bible are written, and that's not the way the beginnings of Genesis are written. The conflict is not necessary. But if you think that being faithful to the Bible means being faithful to, for example, a seven-day creation,
yes,
seven 24-hour days, then you really do have a conflict on your hands.
Well, many do think that, including people who listen to this program, and I certainly don't wish to upset or offend those who think that way. It's not the way that I come to that question, not seven literal days. But because I've taken that stand a couple of times, I've been called all kinds of things over the years. You know, people challenge the basis of your faith if you're not prepared to put your hand on your heart and say seven literal days. And so that's kind of hurtful.
Well, I was going to say it's not just an academic debate, because it does become hurtful, because if you take a particular position that you're not being faithful to the Bible unless you believe that, then you're effectively saying that other Christians are not really proper Christians or not really faithful Christians.
Yes, that's what they're saying.
And I work with a large number of eminent scientists around the country and some overseas as well, who are utterly committed Christians and also committed to mainstream science. And it denigrates them. It denigrates their faithfulness. Say that you're not a serious Christian unless you approach it the way I do. So yes, it can be a hurtful thing too, which is a great shame.
Yes. What would you say are the essential understandings that come from Genesis if a literal 7 days might not be it? Nevertheless, there are some absolutely canonical, undeniably important doctrines that have to be derived from Genesis.
Yes.
And what would
absolutely
they be?
Absolutely. I think that Genesis quite clearly talks about God being behind the whole of creation. The universe is God's universe. God made it. How God made it, it doesn't say, I don't believe, but God made it. And God made human beings. God made human beings in his image, and in a sense for caring for, and you know the word is often dominion, caring for the creation. And God made human beings perfect, and God made a perfect creation. But there's also something badly wrong with things, and the theological term we use for that is the fall. Human beings are also sinful, so you have this this tension between good and evil in a world that God made.
Yes.
All of these things are there, and all of these things gel with the world as we know it.
Yes.
You don't have to be a Christian to look at the world and say, well, there's so much good about it, but there's so much bad about it. What's going on?
But they'll step back from that and then say, well, okay, what's the meaning that's being conveyed here? Well, it is that we're special because we're in the image of God. That places us in an absolutely unique position. But it then creates for me an obligation to love him and an obligation to love the others who he made who are also in his image. So suddenly you can start to build out a whole mission statement, if you like, to use the corporate language, of our life as human beings, a sense of our purpose. And because we know...
We are made for relationship.
Made for relationship
with one another and with God. And that theme which appears in Genesis, you know, Jesus affirms, you know, what is the purpose of humanity? To love God and to love your neighbour. That sums it up.
And to hold in juxtaposition what went wrong, which then separated us from God's ideal.
Yep.
And then go immediately to the cross and see that it was God himself who put that right.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you take the Genesis account and then you hold it against the rest of the biblical canon and say, okay, what went wrong was only able to be put right by God. He did that through Jesus on the cross.
Yeah.
And then that becomes the essential understanding. I was only this week writing a piece about euthanasia, of all things, and it suddenly occurred to me, I am angry when people die. I say, well, everyone dies, but we don't celebrate their death. We celebrate their life.
Yep.
And I'm angry when people die. I was angry when my dad died because I was angry with cancer, which took my dad. I wasn't angry with God. He didn't make the cancer. But the cancer is there as a consequence of the fact that there are things wrong in our world. And God was angry too, and he did something about it in Jesus. And we know that Jesus shared our frustration that death is final. Other than that, he came to put that right.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I'm sitting here in my office looking at a photo of my 23-year-old son who died of cancer.
Oh, Chris.
And he lived a good life. He died a Christian. He said, let me quote him when asked about what was in store for him. He said, I'll be okay, but it'll be crap for everyone else.
Hmm.
But, you know, this stuff happens. But we know it's not meant to happen. This is not the perfect world that we would like to live in. And death is an offence. But thank God, the story is bigger than that.
Chris, I'm so sad to hear about your son. I didn't know about that.
No, that's
But I hope you won't find it disrespectful if I flick from that to say, well, to apply that to our earlier discussion, that things do go wrong in this world, and God wants us to be part of putting it right. He paid the price through Jesus, but then commits to us the ability to work in the meantime until Jesus returns for these things to be put right. And one of those things is certainly, in my mind, working for cures to cancer, but another will be working to restore the planet.
Yeah.
If, for instance, the sea levels are rising and people in Kiribati are going to be without a home in the future, what do we owe the people of Kiribati to do something about it?
Absolutely. I think that one of the aspects of climate change and one of the bad reasons for ignoring it is that it is a social justice issue. The reality is that most Australians are going to be fine for the next 100 years. Put up the walls, if you like, metaphorically and perhaps literally. We can do that. But most of the world, or a lot of the world, that is much more exposed to climate change is not going to be so well off. It's us that's benefiting from the energy revolution of the last 150 years.
Yes.
But the cost is going to be paid, first at least, by those who are poorer, by those who are lower, literally, closer to the sea, like the Pacific Islands.
Yes.
And so it's a social justice issue as well. It's caring for our neighbour.
Well, a great way to frame it, and what a wide-ranging conversation. But, Chris, I do so much appreciate your perspective as a Christian brother and as a professional. So thank you for being with us on Open House.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Dr. Chris Mulheron from ISCAST. He's the executive director, and ISCAST is the organisation for scientists, Christian scientists and technologists. Got a very interesting website too. Look them up, ISCAST, ISCAST. And he's also an Anglican minister and teaches philosophy. He's resident in Melbourne. Well, challenging ideas. And it seems to me that, amongst other things, God gives us our minds to use as well as our hands and our feet. And if we use them well, then we can do great things with what he's enabled us to do, including saving those people of Kiribati from the rising sea levels. You're an open house around Australia.
Discover more open house podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.